comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Hello and welcome again, everybody, to the Nerd Dome, Nerds United, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. I am your host, Greg Mahochko, episode 45 of Nerds United, and we have had a lot of fun in the first 44 episodes, and we're going to have a lot of fun tonight, because as I'm recording this, as always, it's not early, it's not 5 o'clock in the evening or 7 o'clock. Here it is, 10:30, and I've got beer in hand. We'll get to that in a minute, I think it's a solid episode with some content on some shows and some movies, things like that, we'll touch on a few other little tidbits as we go along, and we'll get back to some guests coming up probably as early as next week, and of course into June. We'll hit all that at the end, but before we get rocking and rolling here in episode 45, I've got to plug the fine brewery that is keeping me hydrated, I guess, for episode 45, and that is Schlafly out of St. Louis, the other brewery in town besides Anheuser-Busch. I don't drink a whole lot of AB stuff anymore, really, but Schlafly is good. I've yet to find one that I don't like, and this time I'm going with the Summer Lager from Schlafly, the St. Louis brewery. So it is, when you hear, I go back every time. I go back to late 80s, early 90s. There used to be this game show, Supermarket Sweep. When you're in the checkout aisle and you hear that beep, 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 think of the fun you could have on Supermarket Sweep. Anybody else watch that? There was another show that was on like that that kind of shopping style, but I don't remember the name of that one. For whatever reason, Supermarket Sweep sticks with me. And I remember when you're trying to rack up the dollars, they went for the turkeys, getting as many turkeys and hams as they could. And also the big bottles of laundry detergent for whatever reason. Those were the high price that you max out. You get like five or six of them and rack up the dollars. But you only had a minute or two to do all your shopping. Anyway, so when you hear that familiar sound, you know that I'm wetting my proverbial whistle. This episode, I will warn you right now, episode 45, spoiler heavy. Because we've had some television season finales here in the last couple of weeks. We're going to talk, the movie stuff is not as spoilery. The TV stuff is quite spoilery. So, especially on the Gotham and the Flash, Arrow's a little spoilery. But since I just finally got around to watching the Gotham season finale tonight, and of course the Flash season finale aired tonight as well, those are some main spoiler points. So, with that being said, if you don't want spoilers for those... Now, Gotham's a couple weeks old, so you've probably seen the season finale for Gotham. But The Flash, if you had something else going on, maybe you were watching the ball game or something, you know, Tuesday night, and you didn't watch The Flash, I'm not here to judge. You know, you watch the ball games as it happens live, and you come back and watch The Flash when you can. It's very weird about that. From the standpoint of, I will watch a sporting event live if it's, you know, a game that I'm really tied to or something like that, football season especially, and I'll DVR or, you know, come back and watch something on demand, a series show, sitcom, something like that. But for sports, for me, sports is, that's the one I think that I have to watch live. So, which is, I say sports, not sports entertainment, because I will forego watching a WWE pay-per-view for an hour to watch Game of Thrones or The Walking Dead. I actually did that for the season finale of The Walking Dead here just a few weeks back and interrupted the WWE pay-per-view this past weekend to watch Game of Thrones. So, anyway, the long and the short of it is, this is a spoilery, spoiler-heavy episode. So we are currently already at the 5-minute mark. Who'd have thought? 5 minutes of me talking. If you don't want any spoilers, I say, and this is just a guess, because obviously I'm recording this, so I don't know how long I will talk, but I say you can probably jump forward at least to the 15-minute mark. Just, or download the episode, save it for later, you know, put it in your back pocket, watch the episodes in question so that I'm not spoiling anything, then come back and listen to it later. I'd hate for you to miss a chunk. You know, you get to the end of the episode, you think that's it, you forget to come back and listen. So, watch the episodes, then listen, and we're all right. We're okay. All right. Which is funny, because Matthew McConaughey, I don't know if you've seen, he's quite the nerd. And I'm, again, nerd around here is a term of endearment, but he, I have not seen the video, I've heard of the video, but I've not seen it, his reaction video that he shot of watching the latest Star Wars trailer. Of course, Star Wars due out December, I think it's December 18th of this year, 2015, right before Christmas time, and that latest trailer that came out, of course, at the end, you see the Millennium Falcon, you see Han and Chewbacca, and you have the little narration, a little dialogue from Luke Skywalker at the beginning. A lot going on in that trailer, and like I said, it's a bit disingenuous on my part because I haven't seen the video, but my understanding is that Matthew McConaughey, I don't know if he rolled a tear, but I think that it impacted him, it affected him very much. And I also understand that he's been reading some scripts or looking some things over both on the Marvel and the DC side, so we might be seeing Matthew McConaughey in one of those two cinematic universes in the near future, which is interesting. Matthew McConaughey's a guy, I mean, he's kind of come back a little bit here with, you know, things like Interstellar, which I enjoyed. I thought it was a little long, maybe a little longer than it needed to be, but in the end, I enjoyed it. True Detective on HBO. I think now that he's gotten out of that kind of romantic comedy type of phase of his career, possibly he's starting to come back a little bit more and be more widely accepted. So wish him well, I guess. And maybe you're a Matthew McConaughey fan, maybe you're not. We'll see. We'll see what the future has for him as far as if he's going to end up in one of these cinematic universes we love. Without any further ado, let's jump to Gotham. The Gotham season finale actually aired 2 weeks ago, May 4th, and I finally, again, watched it. It was maybe the best episode that they've had. I think they finished the season on a strong note. At the end of it, you had a lot of things going on. You had right away the return of Fish Mooney. Not only does Fish Mooney return, but as she walks, I guess, through the park where I don't know, the vagabonds, the homeless, the shelter. What's the term? If you're not tall, you're not short, you're vertically challenged, the shelter challenge. I don't know what the politically correct term, but anyway, Selina Kyle is in this group and is immediately awestruck by Fish Mooney. So you start to get maybe a sense, because for most of the season, Selina Kyle, who of course grows up to be Catwoman, and you get some of those little, you see the goggles, you see maybe the way that the hair is or her hood, I can't remember exactly, but you see the small glimpses of the future, and you see her on rooftops and things like that. You know who she's going to grow up to be. She's immediately taken to the, I think the power that Fish Mooney exudes, of course, played by Jada Pinkett Smith. And I don't know if it's good, bad, or otherwise, but a few months back, Jada Pinkett Smith on, I think it was Kelly and Michael, the Kelly Live with Kelly and Michael, she said that her character, or she was not signed on for season two. And Fish Mooney is, as you probably know, Bat fans, not a character in the Batman canon. So if she's not in the Batman canon and she's only signed on for one season, kind of see where that was going. And sure enough, by the end of the season, Fish Mooney was no more. And again, I've said it, spoilers all throughout this episode, so I'm not going to apologize a whole lot for telling you things that I've already warned you about. But Fish Mooney, she came in with a different look, had part of her head shaved, had some studs there, like piercings, I guess, in the right side of her head, which was different. But it was kind of edgy, a little bit. When I first saw Fish Mooney in episode one, kind of had that, classic mobster look. This, I thought, was a little, it was, for lack of a better term, it's a bit more punk, rock. So I liked that. And again, you got to remember that Fish Mooney for the entire season has been pretty well a self-made individual. And had especially after escaping Dahlmacher's island, Dahlmacher, I guess, island, scooping out her own eyeball. Oh, that was, I watched that and I said, holy shit. And yeah, we're going to drop that phrase a couple more times tonight. That took me, back. She scooped her own eyeball out with a spoon. That's crazy. So she's hardcore. Fish Mooney was, and I think that she was willing to do whatever it would take to get back to that level of power. With that being said, Fish Mooney, we hardly knew ye, and was shot by Butch, who shot Fish and then shot Penguin, and then, Butch is all, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it, and Penguin flips his lid, and he says, Butch, how could you, and then he ends up throwing Fish Mooney over, a high wall into the embankment river, presumed dead. That was not surprising to me. I figured that Fish Mooney would have to go, and I kind of figured that in order to secure or cement his place in Gotham, in the Batman mythos, it would have to be Penguin who finally did the deed. What I found unnerving about the episode was the gradual decline, if you will, of Barbara. Barbara started out the season, she was the supermodel girlfriend, or maybe even would have been fiance of Jim Gordon, the detective who would later become the police union president, things like that as the season went on. But they had their falling out. Barbara hooked back up with Montoya from Internal Affairs. The only thing that I can think of that Montoya was a part of, the Gotham version of Internal Affairs, if you will. But Barbara comes back. She sees that Gordon has moved on and is with Dr. Tompkins. And, I guess, his own service or whatever, because, that's, what was he supposed to do? Was he supposed to wait around for Barbara Keene to come back? I don't think so. Barbara kind of sees that, and this is right after she had her traumatic experience where, she was, for all accounts, kidnapped, and as you watch the show, I honestly thought that it was the quote-unquote ogre, and I will not pronounce his name accurately. He was in Rocky Balboa. He played Rocky's son, actually, in Rocky Balboa. He was the main character, or one of the main characters, in Heroes on NBC. Milo Ventimiglia? I'll get that wrong all day long. He was the main bad guy here in the main villain in the last couple of episodes, had taken Barbara, held her, and we all thought, I thought anyway, that he was the one who had killed Barbara's parents. And she confessed to Dr. Tompkins that, in fact, she killed her parents, stabbed them, and then slit their throats. And you see her kind of get that, she had that jealousy kind of vibe going and when she was asking about Dr. Tompkins' relation with Gordon. You just knew, kind of got the feeling as that conversation went on that, oh man, something bad's about to happen here. Sure enough, there's an attack. It was foiled by Gordon, who, you know, they walk in on and see Dr. Tompkins just bashing the hell out of Barbara's head, bashing her head into the floor. So she's passed out and hopefully handcuffed. But that's, you know, if you're Jim Gordon, that's got to be an awkward scene to walk into. It's your one-time residence, your ex-girlfriend and your current girlfriend beating the hell out of each other. And you say, what happened here? And the best that Dr. Tompkins could do is say, she attacked me. And unless there's a nanny cam, and I doubt there is, because I bet they enjoy their privacy, there's no real way to prove that. So what happens if Barbara Keene in season two, you know, comes back and flips that switch and, oh, Jim, she attacked me for no reason. Who knows? You know, that's, like I said, could be, and maybe I'm overthinking or going too far with it, but it could be a very awkward second season for Mr. Gordon or Detective Gordon. And that doesn't even include the conversation that he had with Carmine Falcone there towards the end of the episode, who, by the way, along with the Penguin, Gordon, and Harvey Bullock, kind of escaped mob-style execution when Fish Mooney came in and just popped Don Marconi in the head, because he, you know, he was being a little turd and mouthing off, and I think he got what he deserved. And again, Marconi's not a name that is as prevalent in the Bat mythos. The fact that Falcone went out the way he did, and we'll get to that in a minute, kind of surprising, especially if you look at the recent history. Batman Begins, Carmine Falcone kind of played an important role in the setup of, you know, what Bruce Wayne would become in that, you know, first movie of the Chris Nolan Batman trilogy, Dark Knight trilogy. So with all that, the fact that not only did, I mean, Carmine Falcone, the rest of these guys had several chances. They should, by all rights, be dead right now. But they made it. And then, you know, Falcone says to Gordon, I knew your dad. You know, he trusted me. He gave me this knife. You know, it's a little switchblade. And he turns around and he gives that to Gordon. He says, I'm retiring. He's like, I got a place down south. I'm going to go, you know, kick it and, you know, put my feet in the sand and drink Mai Tais or umbrella drinks, whatever, you know, live out his days. Which, if you're a mob boss, that might be the toughest thing to do. Can you really, you know, like, what is that they say? You can take the boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the boy, or, you know, things like that. You know, you can remove him from that element, but can you really remove that element from him? So, I don't know if we've seen the last of Carmine Falcone. I would understand if we did. They gave him his, I don't know, his ride off into the sunset moment. They kind of ended it on a nice note, you know, where Gordon says, we need you, which is weird. A lawman telling a mobster, we need you to restore order to the city. And then Falcone says, no, you don't need me. We need the law right now. That's how I know it's a good time to get my ass out of Dodge. So Carmine Falcone gone, Fish Mooney dead, Don Maroney, I think, did I say Marconi earlier? No, Maroney. Don Maroney dead. And that leaves the Penguin. And he's just going to be hobbling along, get himself a umbrella. I was going to say penguin suit. That makes no sense. Get himself an umbrella, and we'll see. And by the way, Robin Lord Taylor is phenomenal as the Penguin. Has been a joy to watch all season long. Looking forward to watch his story progress, and he's not the only one. Edward Nygma, they kind of, you know, got that little riddle bit with him, and I can never remember that lady in the office that he was showing affection towards all season long. I can't remember her name, but of course we know that he killed her date, her boyfriend, whatever it was, on the force, destroyed the body, because he works in forensics, he knows how to do that, wrote a note, spelled out his name, Nygma, in the note, a little riddle, and he's like, "Nah, I don't know what you're talking about, lady, it wasn't me at all," and she was on to him, of course, but you get a little early shade of the Riddler there, and just, you know, again, we'll see where that leads. I enjoyed Nygma's character as the season progressed. Look forward to seeing, you know, how that goes. And again, when you can talk about a show like Gotham and not mention Bruce Wayne until just now, I think that's a testament. And I was kind of hard on Gotham earlier in the season, but I think that's a testament to the strength of the characters that they've built up here in the last few months. We do see a little bit of Bruce as he and Alfred are searching the library, the den, whatever you want to call it there at Wayne Manor, for his father's secret, because Lucius Fox says to Bruce in the last episode that your father was a stoic man, so that's like a hint, a key, spurs something in Bruce's mind. They go looking through things. At the end of the day, he finds, I guess, a remote control for a stereo, and the stereo operates, the fireplace moves back, and a secret passage is exposed. Lots of cool things happening on Gotham in the season finale. I think the season finale, well, the last month or so really redeemed a lot of the first season, which I thought had a lot of low points. But again, that's just one man's opinion. Swiggish Laughly for the podcasting fella in the podcast listening individuals at home, at work, in your car, wherever. Appreciate you taking Nerds United with you. My goodness, I just talked far longer than I anticipated on Gotham. Let's talk about The Flash. And the funny thing is, I have more notes about The Flash, but I'll probably get the thoughts out of there in a quicker manner. So let's see here. One of the things that popped out very early on, of course, this was the episode. And again, we're still in spoiler territory, folks, so fast forward a little bit or come back to it, you know, after having an opportunity to watch the season finale fast enough. Real nice moment, nice scene early on between Grant Gustin, John Wesley Shipp, father and son, Flash of today, Flash of 1990, and it was... about the decision to go back in time to follow Dr. Wells' Reverse Flash, aka Reverse Flash, plan, go back in time, save Nora Allen, and in doing so, send Reverse Flash back to the future, back to his home. And at the end of the day, John Wesley Shipp, you know, Henry Allen, says, you know, he uses the phrase natural order, and you can't upset the natural order. A lot of times you see, in time travel movies, somebody goes back in time trying to, you know, save a life or something like that, and you find that they pass on, they die another way. This is not the end-all be-all of time travel movies, certainly, but the movie The Time Machine with Guy Pearce from 2001, two, something like that. You know, you have an 1800s scientist creates, after the death of his beloved, you know, his fiance, whatever, wife, creates a time machine to try to go back and fix it. And sure enough, he goes back in time and she gets killed another way. And that happens a couple times. And he says, well, let me go into the future and see why I can't change the past. Natural order of things is John. Maybe I'm putting more thought into that, but when he said natural order, that's how I interpreted that. So real, real powerful scene between John Wesley Shipp and Grant Gustin. And before I go on any further, I have to apologize to John Wesley's ship. If you remember, about a month ago, obviously, when I was down at Cape Comic-Con, was able to record the Flash panel. In fact, it was Saturday, April 18th, the Flash panel, and had that up for you later that week. And in my post, you know, like, I was not the first person to leak this audio. It had already hit, you know, the internet before. And in doing so, I took a screenshot of the internet at that time, and I posted it on my link on jitterymonkey.com/nerdsunited on the episode link, and said that the internet freaked out about the, you know, the news, this leak information that John had said in the panel. And what I did not know at the time, in fact, what I did not know until about 2 days ago, maybe three, I don't know, was that John had seen that link, seen my post, and sent an email asking, he said, you know what, the internet's not the only ones freaking out. CW Publicity's freaking out too. Could you pull the episode, or at least edit, you know, that part out? And it had to do with the name of the Arrow Flash spinoff, which we now know is Legends of Tomorrow. And he sent that on April 23rd. And John, I have to apologize for you, sir. I did not see that email. I lost access to that email account until just a few days ago. So by the time I saw the email, the information was out there. That's why I never pulled anything. Sir, I apologize. It meant no disrespect. Had I known that the email was there, I would have worked harder to, you know, get that information and fulfill that request. So I apologize to John, to his representatives, to CW. I didn't know that there was an email waiting for me from John Wesley Shipp. Anyway, that has been rectified. I get those alerts on my phone now. All is well. So, apologize to John. Going back to last week's episode, where they really cement all the information that they have on Harrison Wells, we see at the end that it's the Flash versus Harrison versus the Reverse Flash. And he says, you know, you can't beat me, you've never been able to beat me. And Flash says, yeah, but this time I didn't come alone. On his left side, boom, comes down Firestorm, Robbie Amell. And swinging in from the right side, boom, Arrow, Stephen Amell. And I have to think that professionally, that might be the first time that the cousins, Stephen and Robbie Amell, have ever shared the same screen. Both of them have worked for CW. Stephen, of course, Arrow, obviously, and Robbie Amell was on, Tomorrow People. Tomorrow People. So, and by the way, both of them, you know, they kill it. I appreciate, I who would have thought, you know, ever that we would see Firestorm on television on a semi-regular basis, or Adam. You know, now these guys are coming to their own spin-off show. So that's just phenomenal. The idea, we're at the end of the first season of The Flash, and the love interest, if you will, of Barry Allen, which is Iris West, knows that Barry Allen is The Flash. You know, she had to find it out her own way. But I think that it's, we're not that far removed, I don't think, from Smallville, where Clark Kent just tried and lied his way around, you know, Lana Lang for years, and then Lois Lane for years about who he actually was. Here, Iris knows, and maybe that's the plan. Maybe they're trying to really differentiate themselves from Smallville. I don't know. I don't know if it's a conscious decision or, you know, to not be Smallville, or if they're just doing their own thing and it happens to not be Smallville. I don't know. But it's kind of nice that there's, you know, not that sneaking around. You know, when you say sneaking around, you're like, ooh, what's he doing behind her back? I don't know. Turns out he's saving, you know, freaking Central City. But so I like the fact that they've, you know, kind of cleared the air here in the first season. All the important players know. Even one of the villains even Captain Cold knows the Flash's secret identity, which is just unheard of. Lex Luthor didn't find out who Clark Kent was in Smallville until, you know, almost the very end. So, had speculations, but never really came out with that. I loved the end of this episode. First of all, you see Barry make maybe the toughest decision of his life. And that's, you know, he's back in time. Does he save his mom? Does he not? But he comes back to the present. And before he gets to the present, though, you see Reverse Flash, Harrison Wells, or Eobard Thawne, depending on, you know, how you want to take that. And he's in his little time machine. He says, all right, I'm ready to go. I'm getting out of here. But before he does that, a helmet comes flying in out of the little wormhole, a little rip in the space-time continuum. The helmet is that of Jay Garrick, the original Flash, OG Flash. And I love that helmet. I love the notion that maybe they're putting more of the Speed family in here, and Jay Garrick is just, I love that Justice Society group, and I think that there's a real niche, maybe not, I'm trying to think here, I don't think you have to make a movie for that. You don't even have to necessarily put a TV show out there. But I think that there is an audience, a demographic for even a comic book of the Justice Society characters, but not in present day. Back in like the 40s or 50s, you know, their provincial heyday. I think that there's an audience for that. Certainly, maybe I'm being selfish, but I'm an audience for that. So come on, DC. Hook me up with that stuff. And then you get Barry Allen zooming back to the present, pardon the pun, and prevents Reverse Flash from going anywhere. And then they fight. You know, they're going to fight around the place until the most... Now, some people, you know, had said, you know, as a possible or likely outcome of the first season, I did not see it coming. And when I saw it, I said, oh, shit. And I looked at my wife, and she was kind of preoccupied with some schoolwork. But she's like, huh, didn't see that coming. And that quote-unquote oh, shit moment was Eddie Thawne, who wanted to go out a hero, knew that... You know, according to the paper from the future, that he was not going to be with Iris West. He kind of accepted that as a coincidence. He said, hell with it. It's not going to stop me from living my life. Then he gets this opportunity to go out a hero. Touching moment there. But, of course, if there's no Eddie Thawne to further the bloodline, there's no Eobard Thawne to live. So you're kind of doing away with Harrison Wells, or not Harrison Wells, theoretically, he's been dead for a while now. But Reverse Flash, gone. So I thought that was a really fitting end to the first season. My question is, though, if you're Barry, and this is, again, this is me just putting the cart before the horse. You're Barry. You're still in love with Iris. You know, she was in love with Eddie, kind of in love with you. You don't really know. And and so you have this... You know they're going to end up together. But if you're Barry, you've got to live up to that. Like, I'm the Flash, but he just sacrificed himself to essentially save the world. How do I top that? How do I beat that? You know, how do I stand out? You're the Scarlet Speedster, but how do you stand out against a guy who just, you know, made such a selfless act? Especially in the eyes of the woman you love. So I think that's going to be an interesting, you know, maybe side story of season two when that comes back. So there you go. Those are this. I think spoiler time is officially over, and I'm going to take another swig for the podcast listener. I'm dedicating this one to you. Schlafly Summer Lager. That's good stuff right there. Moving on real quick, because this is already longer than I thought it'd go, which is all right by me. If you haven't seen, I was making notes as I was watching The Flash tonight, so a lot of these things kind of not necessarily in any sequential order. They're just notes. They had an Ant-Man trailer in the Flash, you know, tonight during the episode of The Flash. And I noticed there's a big difference in the Ant-Man trailer and Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. The Ant-Man movie being a movie that you didn't even know you would want to watch until you saw its trailer. I mean, was anybody really jumping up and down demanding an Ant-Man movie? And then they, you know, started making the Ant-Man movie. Edgar Wright left the project, but Paul Rudd was there. You've got Michael Douglas, which is funny. You got him as Hank Pym, and Paul Rudd as Scott Lang. So I've seen the trailer a couple times. I'm digging it. It's going to be a great movie. But the difference between Ant-Man and Batman v Superman is, again, Ant-Man was not a movie that you ever really expected or knew that you wanted, whereas Batman v Superman, so much hype, so much anticipation, and for how many years it'd be like, oh man, if they could just get those two on screen together, Batman and Superman. And so I think people look at Ant-Man with no expectations and no level of disappointment and say, oh, that's going to be phenomenal. And then they look at Batman v Superman, and it's got so much hype and, you know, 70 years worth, give or take, you know, ballpark number of, you know, how long we have to wait for a Batman and Superman on the big screen together. And so there, you've got all that anticipation built up, and it's either going to just knock everybody, you know, it's going to just knock the ball out of the park, or it's not going to meet those expectations. Very risky, or not very risky, very, I don't know, maybe risky is the word, high risk, high reward for Batman vs. Superman, but again, it's, those are two movies, folks, two movies in the next 19 months. You have, this is just a list of movies, and it's probably not even all of them, I probably missed some, but here we go. Ant-Man, Fantastic Four, Star Wars Episode 7, Deadpool, Batman v Superman, Captain America Civil War, X-Men Apocalypse, Gambit, Doctor Strange, Suicide Squad, Star Trek, all by the end of 2016. And then, you know, we throw in the fact that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 is going to be in 2016 as well. That is a lot. A lot, and I'm grateful. Because it's a genre that I love, I'll go see each and every one of these. I will gladly hand them my money, and yeah, that includes Fantastic Four, which I'm more and more excited for. I will hand them my $8.50 or whatever it is at my regional movie facility, and I'll gladly go to all of those movies. And that's, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy 2017. You've got Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Anyway, you've got an abundance of movies coming out in the next 5 years that I'm going to be tapped between buying the movie or going to see the movies, eventually buying the Blu-rays, which I will. I'll have all of these. Yeah, that includes Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. Don't judge. I've got the first one. Don't judge. It's not the greatest, but shut up. I can't explain that one. You've got all these. And then a lot of these make me want to go back and read some of the source material because, you know, I can't read it all, or I haven't read it all. I'm sure I could. It'll take a very long time. But there's a lot of stuff that I haven't read. So this will undoubtedly make me want to go back and read some more. So, yeah, this is certainly an investment for me, both of time, energy, and, yeah, money. But it's something that I enjoy enough to, you know, and invest in, if you will. A couple of things as we continue moving. Constantine, we got the word, I think last week, that it will not be renewed or was not renewed by NBC. So will it find a home? I don't see Constantine being on CW or CBS. Maybe Sci-Fi? Probably not AMC, although I don't think AMC is necessarily a bad fit. More likely, I think you're looking at Hulu or Netflix, maybe even Amazon Prime, something like that. And a lot of people poo-pooed on Constantine. I enjoyed it from the beginning, and you know, some people would say that it was watered down, you know, or upset that he wasn't allowed to smoke. But towards the last half of the season, he was smoking. You could see it. I mean, it wasn't, they weren't trying to hide it anymore. Maybe he wasn't smoking, you know, like a chimney, but he was smoking. And that being a big part of the character, a lot of people were unhappy that, you know, I just think that maybe people didn't stick around long enough to give it a shot. I enjoyed it, like I said before. I'll say it again, Matt Ryan is John Constantine. If they ever make a Justice League Dark or try to put it back on the big screen, maybe in a cameo appearance, something like that, Matt Ryan needs to be that guy, the English actor. Or Welsh actor, I take that back. It was phenomenal and definitely believable as John Constantine, as Hellblazer. So, with that being said, while we're talking a little bit comic, a little bit horror, maybe, Fear the Walking Dead is coming in about 2 months' time, July of 2015. This is the Walking Dead spinoff, obviously. And this spinoff is more of a prequel, I guess. It's not connected in any way to what you've seen on The Walking Dead over the last 5 years. It will only go for 5 seasons. It will be like at the beginning of the outbreak of this unknown virus, this flu, I think, and many times they were calling it. So be looking for that in July. Supergirl is coming October, I think, to CBS. What you like about that, CBS and CW are owned by the same, you know, corporation, company, whatever. And Supergirl is also a Greg Berlanti production, being that it's in the Berlanti-verse. If they call Dark Knight trilogy the Nolan-verse, we can call this Berlanti-verse, right? Because it's Arrow, Flash, and now Supergirl. Should be open to the crossovers with Arrow and the Flash. Supergirl is not something that I was overly impressed with at first sight. Those first, you know, release images of the actress, and forgive me, I can't even remember her name right now, which, yeah, I couldn't remember Grant Gustin's name until about 4 episodes in, so I'm sure by the time the show rolls around, I'll have it down, but it slipped me right now. But was not impressed by first images. However, that first look trailer they released a week ago, that got me hooked in. They're going complete opposite of Smallville. They are, you know, she's in the suit right away. She's flying. Already given the name Supergirl. If you remember, they had like rules for Smallville, and it was that couldn't wear the suit, couldn't fly, couldn't be called Superman. At least, I mean, in later episodes, he did a little time traveling, which is weird again to say, and it was popped in the future, saw a Daily Planet headline that says something about Superman saves Metropolis or whatever it was, and it says, oh, okay, well, who's this? Superman. Oh, that's me. But he didn't fly, didn't wear the costume until the series finale. Did a completely different approach with Supergirl, which is fine. If there's one thing that I said earlier, you know, in the year, with the difference between the Flash and Gotham, Flash, you're getting all the Flash villains, and you're getting the Flash to fight them. Gotham, you're getting many of the Gotham villains, no Batman. So if you're going to have Supergirl, by golly, call her Supergirl, and let her wear the suit, let her fly, which she's doing all that stuff, you know, pulling, or not pulling, but saving planes. You know, very, very reminiscent of Brandon Routh's Superman Returns when he saved the plane that Lois Lane happened to be on. So lots of good stuff there. Like I said, looking forward to that. We mentioned Arrow. I thought it was an interesting end to season three. Is Oliver calling it quits? I don't know. I know that Stephen Amell has said that Queen will not wear the Arrow costume again. So a lot of speculation says, well, he's not wearing the Arrow costume, but maybe he's wearing the Green Arrow costume, huh? Huh? I have no idea. They don't... he's not returning my calls, my texts, anything like that. So I don't know. I don't know what the future holds for Oliver Queen, Felicity Smoke. I like the idea that there's still this group of dedicated heroes back in Starling City. You still got the Black Canary, and I dig that voice module, you know, that canary cry that Cisco worked up for Black Canary in one of those crossover episodes a few weeks back. Diggle is going to get a mask or at least some way to protect his identity. Thea Queen is back as Speedy. That's awesome. And I'm trying to think if I'm missing anybody. Probably. Yeah, Nissa Al Ghul. And then you got Malcolm Merlyn as the new Ra's al Ghul. That's going to be interesting. Don't know how that one's going to play out. But I do know that at least for the time being, Oliver Queen is getting a much deserved vacation. Can't forget about Ray Palmer. I know he's going to be there in Starling City as the Atom as well. And, well, I take that back. Spoiler alert. This one's going back a week or so. But Ray Palmer kind of blew himself up at the end of season three. So I don't know exactly what we can expect from him. Every indication looks like he, you know, I think even they put a season three or season four in a little, you know, what to expect coming, you know, moving forward. And I'm pretty sure that Palmer was there as the Atom. So we'll see. And maybe if you're microscopic, you can survive explosions. I don't know. Was not paying attention that day of chemistry class. So anyway, moving forward, Stephen Amell, we know, is Casey Jones in the next Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. Doesn't look bad. I like my Casey Jones with long hair. But that being what it is, I think Stephen Amell will do a fantastic job. He's got hockey sticks. I'm happy. And I liked Elias Koteas as Casey Jones back in the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I still can wrap most of the Partners in Crime T-U-R-T-L-E Power song. So, you know, there I've got that going for me as well. I was doing just a little bit of random looking on IMDb, and I found this is an interesting tie-in. And by golly, if the stars align, I'm going to try to get this individual on the show, because he's a well-known individual in the public, former professional football player, collegiate star, and I guess working his way into acting, and that is Amon Green. And he played for the Green Bay Packers, went to school and played football at the University of Nebraska, so connection. I'm a Husker fan. Maybe he'd give me an exclusive interview. But he is in Batman v. Superman, Dawn of Justice. I saw this on IMDb, so it's obviously official. He is Thug number 2. And that's the facts. Amon Green, the former Nebraska Cornhusker, Green Bay Packer running back, is Thug number 2 in Batman v. Superman, Dawn of Justice. And it's funny because you have so many just... I don't know, it's like everybody, you know, all these extras, or maybe not extras, maybe paid extras or whatever they are, bit parts, they all have random assignments like theirs. Football wife and you know, things. News reporter, I understand. News reporter has a lot of lines. They're usually giving some kind of story. But I thought funny football wife or you know, joke telling mom or embarrassing dad. You know, anything like that. That's just kind of comical. But Thug number 2, and it reminds me of, if you've ever seen the movie Waiting, which was Justin Long, Anna Faris was in it. Dane Cook, goes to show you how long ago it was. At least 10 years ago. Anyway, they're all employees at this restaurant. David Koechner was in it as well. But Dane Cook took the, and this was early on in his acting career, his movie career, but the only way that he would take the gig is he didn't want to be chef number three or whatever it was, or short order cook number two. He wanted to have a name, so I think they called him Lloyd. And that's what he, you know, shows up as in the credits. Lloyd, who's Dane, played by Dane Cook or whatever. So I think it's funny when you see Thug Number Two, give him a name. Let him be Vincent. Or I don't know. But anyway, congrats to Amon Green on that and what we hope maybe will be a growing acting career for the former football star. This is the end, or close to the end of the month. We'll probably have another, might have another episode as early as next week. Otherwise, be looking into June. We'll have our yearly visit with Van Jensen. We've got some other guests that I'm working on, and some other things, you know, some other irons in the fire that we'll hopefully we can tell you all about. And I'm actually thinking about expanding Nerds United beyond the podcast, and maybe start doing some typing. So if you see a link to jitterymonkey.com/Nerds United podcast, just head on over there and clicky click the linky link, and you know, it might just be some written down thoughts in case I end up on the road again and can't always record. So appreciate you tuning in all the long that you've been here. Remember that Schlafly makes fine beers, and you can get them wherever fine beers are sold. Schlafly, the St. Louis brewery, not a paid advertiser, but by golly, I'll keep drinking their beer. Check out the jitterymonkey.com/Nerds United podcast, the Amazon button. I'll throw a few Amazon links of some, I don't know, just some related links, things like that I think you might enjoy. And if you want to check them out, use your Amazon shopping through Nerds United. By golly, I'd appreciate that a lot, and I know Amazon would as well. But I'm the person. They're the big company. I'm the person that can say thank you. 101. Appreciate it. So anyway, I'm getting out of here. I'm going to produce this, finish my beer, and take the dogs outside and go to bed. So have a wonderful day, wonderful week. And until we meet again, I'll see you on down the road. And you're always welcome in the Nerd Dome. Thanks for listening to Nerds United and Jittery Monkey Podcast.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.
Hi, this is John Wesley Shipp, reminding you to keep listening to Nerds United and all the great shows on Jittery Monkey Podcast Network.